Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter @_ringside rant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation. Welcome to episode 146 of the Ringside Rant. I am the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is JD Justin Davis. Justin, what's going on? I see you in your background there that you got a little plant, little lizard back there, huh?
Yeah, we got a chameleon. His name is Stu, after the great Stu Hart, that big rhino. So yeah, his name's Stuart. And I now have a chameleon in my background.
Didn't you say last time that didn't you get like a fish or something and the cat ate it?
A frog.
Frog, that's what it was. Okay.
Yes, Freddie the Frog, named after the greatest singer of all time, Freddie Mercury. And now Freddie 2 we have. So we have a new frog, Freddie 2.
Oh, Jesus. you're like a amateur Jack Hanna.
That's right. Jack Hanna's from Columbus here near from
I didn't even know that. I was just shooting from the hip. Yeah. That's the only person that I came thinking.
Jack Hanna ran the Columbus Zoo for years and years.
Okay.
And as a kid on Saturday mornings, I always watched Jack Hanna's adventures. And I loved watching him with all the animals, and I loved when he would come on the Jay Leno show or the Dave Letterman show. Wow. Jack Hanna was the goat of animal people, man.
The goat of animal people. That's not even on the script, folks. We're not even
speaking of animals. Go Bengals. Hooday, baby.
Yeah. Actually, I was recording Sunday night because of forward schedules this week, at least mine anyways. I'm working overnight, so I'm like, I gotta get something out. We gotta get something recorded by
Sundays. Got a week from today, the Bengals will be beating the Rams for Super Bowl 56 or some shit.
I forgot who it was on Twitter. I saw say, oh, it was Gary Vaynerchuk. He's like, oh, predictions for the Super Bowl. I look down there, I'm like, Rams. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna
it's
be that
all
guy.
Rams.
Exactly. I'm like,
you know what? When the Bengals played the Chiefs, everyone picked the Chiefs.
That's fine.
When the Bengals played the Titans, everyone picked the Titans. So I am just fine with everyone picking the Rams for the Super Bowl.
More importantly, who's Ric Flair picking? Then you just pick the opposite and you'll be fine. But no, I said 24-22 Cincinnati.
One of the prop bets I saw, which I actually think I want to bet this. What is the chances that Evan McPherson scores the first points in the game? I think it's a high chance. If we get the ball first and don't get all the way down there and get to the 40 yard line, Evan McPherson will kick a fucking 50 something yard field goal.
He has before.
So I might take that bet.
Is it just for the just Cincinnati scoring or both in general?
Overall.
Okay.
Well, Evan McPherson score the first points. It's not a bad bet. Option.
No, that's not a bad option. Bad bet. Excuse me. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We're definitely, everybody in my household is cheering for the Bengals. I said, if Justin is a Bengals fan, we're a Bengals fan if the Bills are out. So my son's like, Gavin's like, yeah, yeah, we're going to cheer for the Bengals, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, as long as I don't want the Rams.
And we beat the Chiefs who beat you, so you should be rooting for
right,
us.
Right, right. So you technically beat us then. Technically, if you
– it kind of pissed me off when all these Bills fans were like, oh, the real Super Bowl was the Chiefs and Bills game. Apparently not, because we beat the fucking Chiefs.
Right, so right,
y'all can
right.
Go shut up.
Good thing you're not bitter about it or anything. Jesus.
All you bitter Bills fans. Oh, our Super Bowl. No, you lost, bro. You lost. That's all.
No, we did. I'll take it. And now Josh Allen's playing at Pebble Beach this weekend. So.
Oh, see, he's having a nice little off season then.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Must be nice. But anyways, so we're moving forward. Last week's episode on Nitro. This week, we're actually going to be doing our first WCW Thunder.
Thunderstruck!
Sure, that too. And this one's coming from February 12th, 1998. It's episode one, or excuse me, season one, episode yes. six.
On the cock.
I put these notes out every week, guys, and I look at them, but I'm like, I still.
It is so weird to think of wrestling as season one, episode six. I hate the Peacock. Like, I miss the WWE Network so much.
Well, we just got to move to the UK or something because they still have it over there. I understand, right?
Yeah, I think so.
For now, yeah,
we got Tony, Bobby, and Lee Marshall leading us here on the commentary, which you don't see Lee Marshall too often, but I like Eric breaking it up and putting Lee on there for Thunder.
Yeah. But one guy that I really want to see on commentary is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to him right now and see what he has to say.
It's the opening contest.
Yeah.
All right, Justin. So this episode of Thunder is coming from the Myriad in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, the hometown of my favorite lawyer, Mr. Michael Amend.
Yeah, not mine, because I'm from West Virginia. My favorite lawyer is Stephen B. New.
Thank you, fuck you, bye.
So Michael Amend can go fuck himself.
Well, I think both our lawyers could get their asses kicked by, like we said last week or the week before, by the gimmick attorney Michael Dawkins. I would honestly love to see Dawkins and Amend go at it, seriously.
The funny thing is, I actually met Stephen P. New because he went to the University of Marshall, which is about, 800 yards me, right? From my house. So.
Oh, it's that close. I didn't know it was that close.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to it. And I messaged him one day and met him at the Marshall football game. So.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Well, we are Stephen P. New, and that's not an ad.
Thank you. Fuck you. Bye.
So for those of you that didn't notice last week, we actually added some little sounders in there. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If there's something in there that you don't like, or you want to see something different, let us know. It's not, we try to lighten it up a little bit with some nice sounders and making fun of each other. So, but anyways,
you just made the list.
So this Thunder, we don't hear a lot of people really breaking down Thunders on whatever podcast, whatever television show that you really listen to.
Yeah.
It's really a forgotten television show that, that WCW did. And a lot of people will say, oh, this is kind of like your secondary show. This is your B show. This is your superstars, WWF superstars, that everybody else would come to know. But
it's basically SmackDown before SmackDown. Honestly,
because this is we have another year. Yeah.
WCW is trying to expand. And I remember in ninth grade, whatever I was when this came out, I was excited for a second WCW show. Mm-hmm. I was watching every Thursday, at least for the first few months until I realized it was shit.
It only took you a month?
Yeah. But for the most part, I was excited about it at the beginning.
Yeah. No, and it's nice to see now one of the good things that come out of AEW is their main show is on TNT. Now it's on TBS. This show is on TBS and Nitro is on TNT. So you get that Turner Broadcasting systems as far as your broadcast home for WCW Thunder. And this pretty much really went up for 3 years until the company folded there in 2001. And yeah. I was always a big fan also, maybe it's something we can talk about off air about doing potentially is WCW Saturday nights. Is you start at 6:05 on TBS, you get Tony and whomever else they end up throwing together with him. And it's always that revolving ring, which I always thought was in. I'm like, how the hell can you wrestle in a ring that's moving? That's me. But that's also when I was, you know, a young slapdick, as you would say.
Mm-hmm.
But for this episode of Thunder, we're going, like you said, we're there with Tony and Bobby and Lee Marshall. And normally Lee Marshall, you only see him, well, you hear him over the phone on Nitros as he's on the road. And at this time, I thought he was a nice third guy in the booth. Really wasn't too serious, wasn't like joking around too much as well, but it was kind of in the middle.
Yeah. No, I love having Lee Marshall here with Bobby and Tony. It's a perfect breakup of their usual Nitro crew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like how we open up with Bischoff and Hogan coming out here, which tells me immediately that they are trying to build this. This is still in the early stages of Thunder. They are trying to build Thunder. So they're going to have Bischoff and Hogan come out right at the shoot. You know what I mean? Like, that shows you that they're still in the process of trying to build this show. So that was good. Hogan actually then comes out and calls out my man. How dare he call out the Hitman? Hogan calls out.
Oh, that guy. Okay, sorry. I thought you were somebody else.
Hogan calls out Brett and says, "I'll beat you, brother, from coast to coast." The funny thing is, Hogan, you never had the balls to wrestle Brett in a one-on-one match for the title. So apparently you a lie, as Tony would say.
Yeah, it's the one thing that really bugged me about this, and even looking forward at last week too, that I failed to mention as well, is there's so many fucking moving parts with this goddamn feuds.
I know. Is he feuding with Macho, or is he feuding with Brett?
Or is he Sting?
Sting, yeah.
Or Luger or Flair? What the fuck is going on? Yeah. And it's just like
booking. It's really right. It's bad writing, is what it is. It's like, listen, I can understand his heat with Brett because Brett, you know, kind of screwed him over in the title match at Starrcade, whatever. I get that. I get his heat with Sting. Why are you now starting in with this Macho Man shit? In the middle of all this, it makes zero sense.
And it's just like, you need a damn scorecard just to keep track of all this stuff. It's just so many moving parts, and it's all, I get it if it's later in the show and you're just trying to, you know, wake up the crowd, I guess. But when you're starting the show like this, the people are pissed off to begin right after that. Start up with the match. And is it like that difficult?
It's just too much. It's too much. You know, how can Hogan be feuding with Bret Hart, Sting, and Macho Man all at the fucking same time? Like, I understand Hogan thinks he's the best in the world and everything revolves around him, but you're going to cause three feuds around three major players all at the same time.
At the same time. And it just doesn't. It is what it is. You know, there's a reason why we're here and they're there at that time anyways.
And realize Brett had already had his little feud with Ric Flair and beat Ric Flair at Sold Out.
Yeah.
And so now we're going back to Hogan calling out Brett here. And I think this is going to lead to Brett joining the NWO, right? Eventually,
but it's just like, I never got that. You know,
no, me either.
It's not a matter of liking it. I'm indecisive on that. I could care less either way, but it's just like, it doesn't make sense to put Brett into the NWO.
Just like most of WCW at this time. Now, we were talking last week about the downfall of WCW. This is part of it. You're going through too many tizzies here. It's too much.
Because at this time, we're 98? WWF is, they're running rap shot with is Vince McMahon and Austin, Undertaker, the Ministry, the Corporation, The Rock, Triple H, DX.
We're leading to Shawn and Austin at WrestleMania 14.
Sure.
You know, we're getting there with WWE, and we're getting away from shit with WCW right now.
And I think we're going to start to see, as we go in over the next couple of weeks leading up to Super Bowl 8, is we're going to start to see the real downturn of it. I think, like we said last, when we've done the 97s previously, okay, that's not, or when we did Starrcade 97, excuse me, that was more specific. That was just, a lot of people consider that the start of the downfall, but they're still hot here in 98 early on. And then they really screw the pooch. We'll get to it, obviously, in a few weeks with Super Brawl when we welcome Adam from Bama on the show. But it's just, you're starting to see a lot of the downturn, man. You really are. And 98, it's downhill pretty fucking quick.
Well, speaking of downturn, our first match is Prince Iaukea versus Kidman. And then Louis Spicoli joins the broadcast for this, which I didn't need. Do you know when Louis Spicoli died? Was it
this between this, right after this episode? And hold on, let me look it up because I'm almost positive it was right almost right after this show.
Because they were building a match for him and Larry Zbyszko at Super Brawl. And I was thinking, I don't think that match happened, right?
He died 3 days after this episode.
Wow.
On the 15th, 1998. We're going to talk about it because they do a little thing at the beginning of Nitro, which we're going to go over next week,
yeah,
which will be the go home Nitro for Super Brawl. But he was found dead in his apartment. And we'll get into it next week, but it was 3 days after this episode.
It's a shame because this was the biggest push he'd ever got on major wrestling.
And he was getting it. He wasn't terrible, though. That was my thing. It's like everybody wanted to crap on him, but he wasn't. It wasn't that bad. You know what I mean?
And then I hate to say this, but you wonder, he's getting more money. Does that mean he can buy more drugs, you know, to where he can screw himself up so bad?
Well, actually, you know what? Screw it. We'll get into it now. Allegedly, it was a combination of drugs and alcohol where I have to look more into it because I read an article that he choked on his vomit or something.
I've read that before. Yeah.
And aspirated, I think it's aspirated. Is that the right
word? Yes, that's aspirated. The right word.
Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. I we'll get into it more next week. We don't want to put a downturn on this show by any means, but
yeah. He did join the podcast. I mean, or not the podcast. He joined the broadcast.
There you go.
With Tony and Bobby, and he was on there during this match. Kidman wins with the Shooting Star Press, which is always, impressive. I love Kidman. It is what it is for the first match. Prince Iaukea jobs to Kidman. And then we get to our second match, which is Ming versus Hugh Morris. Now, I have some notes on this, but this was an interesting match. First of all, these two were, it's kind of what you would expect to see on Thunder. Ming versus Hugh Morris, nothing big as far as match goes. But There was a funny botch spot on this match where Ming puts his arm down to body slam Hugh Morris, and Hugh Morris doesn't do it. And then Ming just holds it, and then Hugh Morris walks into it and gets body slammed.
That was a huge botch of all botches. But what I wanted to bring up too, before, in between the previous match with Kidman and Ikea, Tony comes and announces that there was a match between the WCW World Tag Team Champions, the Steiners, and taking on the Outsiders at Super Brawl 8, officially. They've been playing in the seeds last week, and you know it's official now. So it is, you know, for those of you that have watched Super Brawl, you know already what happens. But we're not going to tell you. We'll wait, make you wait until the end of the month. Yeah, watch it. But
in the middle of this match, Tony announces while Spicoli is on the announced broadcast. Tony announces Spicoli versus Larry for Super Brawl, and Spicoli flips his shit. Like, I didn't agree to that, whatever. Then Ming wins with the Tongan death grip. But the interesting thing is Jimmy Hart comes in, calls off Ming, and Ming won't do it.
Or tries to.
And then so he calls out the Barbarian to call Ming off. And Ming puts the Tongan death grip on the Barbarian and then runs Jimmy Hart off. So it's almost like we're teasing a base Ming turn here,
which I always thought that this was interesting looking back on it now, obviously after watching it live at the time. And we've talked about it before. I've always been a big fan of Ming and the Barbarian as a tag team, and even as singles wrestlers, because I believe it was Tony that made a comment, I think it was on this episode. Correct me if I'm wrong, but hey, you once managed Ming and the Barbarian or something like that. And he had some.
Yeah, he did say it on the show. Yeah.
And
I think he just said, yeah, he was a hard person to manage.
And that many words, but and I always thought that Jimmy Hart managing him was kind of a little, he kind of needed somebody. Like Bobby was perfect for him, but I think they didn't want to put Bobby with them and have everybody associate the WWF then.
When you got Ming losing his shit and Jimmy's going, please stop, baby. Please stop. Don't do that, baby. Like, that ain't gonna work, Jimmy.
And then he tries to kick him and shit. I'm like, that's really gonna happen. But no, I always thought it was gonna happen eventually, but they played it off and played it off and played it off, and they really didn't they waited long enough to actually get the build to get these two monsters to face each other. So but we're in between, we're gonna see a WCW Saturday night commercial, 6:05 Eastern on TBS. Davey Boy Smith teams up with Jim the Anvil Neidhart in tag action. Yay. And the crowd goes dull. So Lee Marshall comes back to commentary, and I'm like, okay, is this the same way that we're going to see these promos too? You can have one guy go off, then you have one guy come back, you can have this guy go off, and then another guy come. It's like, context is king. It's like, why would you change it that often? I get that you want to build the whole feud, but it's like, why?
Yeah.
But we're going to see your WCW US Heavyweight Champion, Diamond Dallas Page, taking on Mortis.
With James Vanderberg.
And, we'll just leave it at that.
I mean, honestly, I didn't mind this match. First of all, it's two New Jersey guys. These guys became a group later in WCW, right?
Mm-hmm.
DDP sold great for Mortis during this match. I thought it was actually a really solid match. DDP still selling his fucking ribs, though. It's like, how long are these ribs going to be hurt? For real, like. Weren't we doing this in the middle of 97 and now it's early 98 and we're still got shit wrapped around the ribs and shit? Like, I'm kind of over that at this point.
Yeah, the faction was Diamond Dallas Page, Chris Kanyon, and Bam Bam. Bam. Yeah. The Jersey Triad. They always come out and they always went the three.
Yeah. So you got, you know, I'm sure that DDP said, let me work with Chris Kanyon because they were friends. Mm-hmm. And they had a great match. He sold the fuck out of it for Kanyon or Mortis. It was a really, I didn't hate the match at all. I liked it.
Actually. No, I loved it.
I thought it was one of the best matches on the card. I'm still kind of tired of DDP selling the ribs. Like, can we get over the rib injury for now? Like, it's a little old. But the crowd popped hard as fuck for the Diamond Cutter.
But they always have it this time. They always did.
I know. But yeah, it was, you can tell that it's over huge here. Then the Flock comes out, takes Mortis out of the ring, and Raven even flows him on the ramp.
Well, to put a little context on this is Mortis wanted to join the Flock, become part of the Flock, because he basically was saying, hey, it's kind of, not so many words, Mortis has kind of ran its course with James Vandenberg. He doesn't want to be part of this guy anymore. He wants to branch out and be his own person and all that stuff. So that was before this.
So basically, the Flock was saying, fuck you.
Or were they?
That's right.
Because this could be their quote-unquote initiation into it.
Yeah, I like this angle, the Flock angle, man. Yeah. Right now, it's going well for me. I've enjoyed it. I don't have a problem with it.
And we talked about it a little bit last week. It was just that faction that it was for that every person that like kids like you and I at this time in ninth grade, eighth grade, whatever, that weren't fitting in. That, you know, they weren't, they're athletes. They weren't,
want to be a little bit of a rebel. You know.
Exactly. And they're playing off. And like I said, they're also playing off of that Nirvana-esque grunge character a little bit as well. And you could relate to it. And that's, I've said it, you know, that since we started doing this stuff is I like when wrestling is relatable, when it's believable, when you believe something, then that's when I invest my time into watching AEW on Wednesday or their pay-per-view on Saturday. And then you see this other crap from, you know, WWE. It's like, that's just kid shit. I'm like, I get that. Gavin's 10 years old. We'll be 10 years old in April. I get that. He loves that stuff. But majority of the time he watches AEW because he likes the Orange Cassidy's. He likes Adam Cole's. You know, he likes that stuff. So,
you know, I think the difference is what made us great wrestling fans. When we were little kids, wrestling was giving us the Hulkamania, take your vitamins type shit, right? Then when we were in junior high, like now, we're getting the Steve Austins and the Flock and the, you know, that kind of goes into our next stage of life. You know what I'm saying? Like wrestling.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Wrestling evolved with us in a way. We got lucky in that way. And now wrestling is just a lot of, you know, staying in that junior high area and isn't leaving it, so to speak.
And that's why I really go off on people that, oh, you're a wrestling fan. You like that fake shit. I'm like, no, it's something where you can, I've told it on shows that I've been on, people that I've talked to, why they always ask, why'd you start watching wrestling? Why did you like wrestling? And it's, I'm like, I don't, it was part of me. It was my,
because we didn't have anything to watch on Saturday afternoon.
Exactly. It was either wrestling or it was cartoons or nothing.
I had someone that doesn't agree with me politically, and he attacked me the other day on Facebook and said, this is someone that still believes wrestling's real. I said, if you think wrestling's real, then you're a lot dumber than I think wrestling's real, then you don't really get what I'm talking about here. But, well, and they don't, so it's whatever.
Yeah. But something that was definitely real was this next this feud between Stephen McMichael and Davey Boy Smith, man.
Yep.
Ah, God. It was definitely real, and it was definitely a stiff ski match.
Well, after the Mortis and DDP match, we get a Bulldog McMichael feud review on video, leading us, you know, and just showing how they've wrestled a few times. They had Bulldog beating him the first time, and then we had a double count out or something. And that's leading us up to our fourth match of the show, which is Jim Neidhart. You know, that Rhino, Jim Neidhart versus McMichael here, which it's not going to be a five-star match in a Tokyo Dome. We all know that, right?
No, but it's pretty much going to be a theme of this episode, as you'll see later on. Hey, we got a DQ finish.
It's a DQ finish. Bulldog comes out. You know, that's basically all we need to know about this. Bulldog comes out and sets up their match at Super Brawl, I think. So there's no big deal there. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. Our fifth match, though, we got Buff with Vincent against Chris Adams.
Gentleman Chris Adams, man. If you guys have not watched a Gentleman Chris Adams match, go back, throw it in your Google machine, go Google the internet, go on YouTube, whatever. Check it out, because dude was freaking great, man. And
honestly, I felt like this shouldn't have been much of a match, but Chris Adams sold so well for Buff that he made it a good match. Yeah.
But he got Bagwell over. And whether you like him now, whether you liked him then, or the other way around, when Bagwell was in the ring, he was over, regardless whether he was a heel or a face, he was over.
I'll say this: when Chris Adams came out, there was silence. The crowd
nobody knew who he was. That was a problem. That's the problem here in WCW. That's the other problem here in WCW. When you got guys coming like, and nothing against Chris Adams personally, but you guys got Chris Adams, you got Dave Taylor, all these UK guys. Then you have all these Mexican wrestlers, these Japanese wrestlers. Nobody knows who the fuck you are. We're not in the age of today.
I'll just say this though, too, with Chris Adams. From everything I've ever heard about Chris Adams, he was a fucking dick to people. Yeah. But he was a great worker. I'm not going to take that away from him. And he worked his ass off in this match, selling the Buff. He made it a really good match. Buff got over with the Blockbuster, which is actually a really good finisher. Mm-hmm. It's where Buff jumps off the top turnbuckle when the guy is bent over, and then Buff does a flip and then does a neck breaker. Mm-hmm. That's a hard finisher to do. It's a good finisher. I like the finish of the match. Yeah, I like the finish of the match. I like the match overall. It was meant to get Buff over. I feel like it did its job.
Mm-hmm. So our boy Tony here is reiterating again that Hogan is declaring war on Bret Hart. So we got that going for us, at least. They're trying to... like I said, we said before, it's like they're building this up. It's like, what the crap are you?
Why don't you fight him, Hulk?
Exactly.
Keep declaring war. Why don't you wrestle him?
And then we see a short little montage with Juventud.
Well, I was going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We get a Hoovy build vignette by Mike Tenay. Mm-hmm. And you can tell they're building Juventud. Like I said last week, they are starting to build Hoovy into a legitimate dude here. And that's why we're getting this Hoovy build from Mike Tenay, and they're building up to his match with Chris Jericho for the Cruiserweight title at Super Bowl.
Well, it's so, a mask. He's putting his mask on the line against the title.
Yes, he's putting his mask on the line.
Again,
they're showing
we see
us
again.
Yeah, we're showing us. They are showing us where Chris tried to take his mask off the other day at Nitro or whatever. And then we get our sixth match of the show, which is Chavo versus Jericho. Chavo Guerrero Jr., who is just now, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Chavo.
No, we haven't.
And
that's what the show is really doing, that you start to see, if you guys go back and watch these early Thunders, you've seen a lot of these guys on these secondary shows that you normally wouldn't see on Nitro. because, okay, hey, you got Chavo, you got Sick Boy, you got Lodi, you got Saturn, you got Davey Boy, you got Benoit, whatever. You still got those mid-card to low-card guys, but you still have your Ravens, your Benoits, Buff Bagwell, we'll put in that category, of guys that are high-end over.
This is the time for them to shine. Exactly. Here on Thunder. Yeah.
Exactly. And Chavo, we all know what the Guerrero family is built upon, that of great workers, goes all the way back to their lineage, goes all the way back to Gory Guerrero. So we know what they can do in the ring. And it's just sad. You see a lot of these matches are like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. It's like, what the fuck are we doing?
And I spoke wrong when I said it was last week. After Jericho put Chavo in the Lion Tamer, Hoovy comes out and goes after Jericho, and then Jericho tries to take the mask off
at this episode. Yeah. I was gonna let you explain yourself, so I wasn't gonna allow to go too far, but so this next match, we won't spend too much time on it. Davey Boy versus Sick Boy. Davey Boy went over in 3 minutes, 9 seconds, running power slam.
And then Steven Michael comes out.
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward.
And they're just setting up their angle. That's all it is, you know. Bulldog's gonna squash Sick Boy, and then Steve's gonna come out and attack Bulldog. It's the same old bullshit we see in wrestling all the time.
Yeah. So another bullshit finish here after this next match. We got a Raven's Rule match between Raven and Chris Benoit. Charles Robinson ends up throwing this match out at 4 minutes and 16 seconds. Did you see that Benoit bump into that chair in the turn? Holy shit. That type of shit. It's like, you're looking into the future, man, of head trauma in this sport.
Honestly, I wish these two guys could have had a pay-per-view match, and maybe they did, but I don't remember, but a long pay-per-view match, because these guys could have had a good match, you know, instead of this type of match here.
But an actual technical wrestling match, because for those of you that don't know Raven, go back and watch him. He is a great worker.
The dude can wrestle.
He can. Yeah. And then DDP comes out and scares away Raven and beats up the rest of the flock as Ben Wise is caught in the rings of Saturn. So that's going
back to last week when we were talking about each of them being baby faces. They're going to wrestle each other at Super Brawl, I think, for the U.S. title.
Yeah.
But they're both taking up for each other, getting heat on themselves as baby faces here.
Yeah. And it's just like, who's facing who now? It's like, what feud is what feud? It's like, what are we doing? And speaking of what are we doing, we got Goldberg taking on Glacier in this next match. Spear, one-arm jackhammer, because
haven't we already seen this?
Yeah, it's a minute and 5 seconds. We'll move on.
That was a filler to get Goldberg a check.
I want to talk about is we saw all this introductions with Glacier when he came into the company. Has he basically became a jobber at this point?
He's a jobber. In my opinion, he was a jobber about 3 months after he came in.
Yeah. I think they built him up too much. And Ray Lloyd, he's got his school down there. He's with Cody's Nightmare Factory. And he's a great worker. He knows his shit, but it's just like, you give him a fucking gimmick. It's like, what the hell? It's like 1994 WWF again. I'm like, if you did that in 94, it would have gotten over. If you do it now in 98, it doesn't.
It's done. He's a jobber. So
two guys that aren't jobbers are Lex Luger.
But you know what? Honestly, there's nothing. I ain't gonna shit on that.
I've
never been a jobber. I would love to be a jobber for WWF. I'll go in there and lay down. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not going to shit on someone that does. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that's what he's doing.
But I agree with you. But at the same point, it's like you build this guy up as this huge karate and taekwondo and martial arts expert. And now he's a fucking jobber. It's like,
I know.
Why the hell would you bother then?
Well, because my opinion, I think they signed him to a certain year contract. brought him in with that, that all those big vignettes in 96 or 7. And then after a while, he just became a jobber, but you still got him on contract. So that's what you're going to do with it.
Yeah. No, right? I get that. Yeah. So we're at our main event here, Ric Flair taking on Lex Luger. And this match goes about a little over 5.5 minutes. And when it's Luger rings by DQ, Flair's begging off, man. Is Flair one of the best beggar offers? I don't know how you
He is the beggar offer.
He's the beggar offer, yeah.
Rick comes out in his blue robe with kind of the clear silver sequence on it. Then he has black tights and black boots, which I don't like that. Listen, Rick, I know we can't go back in history, but when you come out with a robe, your shit should match. I don't like it when he comes out with a blue robe and then he has black tights and black boots.
Well, it's the same shit when he came out in his purple robe. And it's no discredit on the robes. His robes were fantastic. But when you come out in a purple robe and then you got red boots and black pads, it's like, yeah, what the fuck?
Like, go with your color scheme, bro. Yeah, just match it up.
Come on, like, let's do it.
If you're coming out in your blue robe, put your blue shit on, man. I love Rick in blue. I love Rick in about any color. Like, I remember I loved him back in the 80s when he would wear his pink with his pink tights and boots, or his purple tights and boots, or even his blue, baby blue. I remember that he wore that a lot, blue.
Yeah. He wore that a lot in the 80s.
And then in the early 90s, he wore yellow a lot. Because
back in the 80s, everybody, it was, they were either wearing black or they were wearing red. And
I just feel like in 97, 98, everyone wore black.
Oh, exactly.
And I hated that. Like, why is every fucking body wearing black? Like, this, I hate it when I see two wrestlers wear the same colors.
Yeah.
Like, can we not all wear black? Like, I understand y'all want to be Steve Austin or Bill Goldberg, but how about someone be different? That would be cool.
And it's just like, nobody wants to, you know, be different. Nobody wants to wear white.
You know? White is a great color, I think. I loved when Shawn Michaels wore the white pants at WrestleMania 12 against Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Loved it with the gold hearts. I love that. It was different.
We even saw, I forget what, was it WrestleMania maybe or Royal Rumble or something? Randy Orton wore white. Like white and then black boots or something. Triple H has done it quite a bit too. And it's different.
That's why I always loved Brett. I mean, Brett coming out there and Jim Neidhart, even in the early Hart Foundation days of the tag team, them coming out in that pink with black trim, like that was different. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved it. And I always loved Brett's stuff in the early 90s and mid 90s. Because no one else wore that. Mm-hmm. And I just wish everyone at this time would quit wearing black. It just got annoying. But okay, I'm off my, you guys know I am a wardrobe aficionado. I get fired up about it. But Rick immediately goes into the ring and gets into a gorilla press slam. Imagine that.
Like, shocking. It's okay. Now, have you ever seen him? And another thing, I think, didn't he go up top too? To the top turnbuckle?
Yeah, I think he did.
I think that's this is the thing. Everybody wants to fault John Cena for the five moves of doom. Ric Flair has the same shit.
Yeah,
The Rock has the same shit.
Brett has
the same shit.
Brett does in a way, but Brett kind of always shit on Rick for always doing the same spots. The gorilla press slam, the getting caught off the top ropes. You know, he called him a spot guy, you know, just a. And I do agree with Brett in a way, because Brett would win matches in different ways. He only won the WWF title with a sharpshooter once. Now, would he have his certain moves? Yes. But he wouldn't do them in the same order every time, and that would be it. I don't know. And I'm sure I'm going to get heat here from shitting on Rick, but I'm just saying Rick was kind of a routine guy, and I don't blame him for that, because if you're wrestling every night in the 80s and late 70s and wrestling every night at house shows, you need to do those spots because the fans want them. You know what I mean?
Well, but you got to think about, you know, you listen to Ric Flair Uncensored. I highly suggest that everybody do that. If you're any type of a wrestling fan or wrestling historian, history fan that loves the sport of the 80s, the 90s, whatever, you'll enjoy it. But it's just this things. It's like when you're working twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, you work for basically, I think he was saying one time he was working straight for like a month at a time.
Right. And if you're doing that though, then why would you have to really think, honestly, it's impossible to say, let's do a different match every night when you're doing two matches a day and going downtown to town. I would do the same shit too. You know what I mean?
No, I
agree. Like, because it's not like Brett was doing WrestleMania 13, then Raws, and then SummerSlam. No, if you're working every night, I would get why Rick would do his same shit over and over again. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I get that. And then, like I said, we're going to see Savage run down and jump Luger for the DQ. And then we're going to see Hogan. And
we're going to fill it up here with the NWO problems.
And it's just another, like per usual, it's a giant clusterfuck at the end of a WCW television program.
And this really embodies WCW early 1998. We have a main event of Ric Flair and Lex Luger, two people that don't have anything to do with the NWO, right? But yet the NWO is going to come in and we're going to get an NWO finish out of this. You know what I mean?
Like it doesn't make sense. Because do you remember who was booking at this time? Was it Flair? No.
No. It was probably Hogan, honestly.
It probably had to be Hogan or Nash.
Kevin Sullivan was still there booking. But Nash, I don't think, was booking yet at this time, but he probably had a lot of influence. But Hogan and Bischoff had the most influence here. I think Kevin Sullivan was there. I think some other people may have been around.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand why you have a main event of Flair and Luger and you're going to throw it into an NWO bullshit at the end. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and this is why people got tired of the NWO. This is why it had to break up later. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't let anything else happen other than the NWO. You know what I mean?
I got to get my shit in, pal.
Yeah. I mean,
that's basically what it is, to be honest.
Guys,
with you.
I know I'm going to get heat on this episode from people.
Emotional damage.
And that's fine.
You normally do, anyways.
That's true. But I'm just saying, there was a certain, the NWO had been around since mid 96. We're in early 98, right? Do we have to keep doing this every show?
It's the same shit.
Did this. I knew as a little kid, I was so tired of the NWO by this point. Really tired of it.
Because I think this is around the time when I really started switching the channel, watching WWF. Because I was at, like, we were in ninth grade, and the main reason why I wasn't watching Raw and WWF at, you know, early 98, 97, 96 was my parents didn't like it. And I'm like, well, what the fuck am I going to do? I got to do what my parents say, even though I'd probably sneak it later on anyways. But this time I'm switching over. I'm seeing what's on the other channel because I don't want to see this. And like you said, this NWA same bullshit every fucking week.
Everyone blames a lot of shit on the, you know, people said the end of Starrcade 97 was a downfall. No, the downfall was hanging on to this bullshit for too long.
Yeah.
You know, not giving storylines around other people. Like, we had Luger and Flair here. Why don't we have good storylines with those guys? Because those are pretty good people to put storylines around. We don't have it because we got to focus on the NWO. Everything's NWO. And I just think that was the reason why we started to go on a downslide here, because they, and Eric will say the same thing, we held on to the NWO too long.
Yeah.
And it shows. It really does show going forward here, past here in 98 and looking even far, like last week too, we started to see it too on the Nitro we did. So overall, Justin, how would you rate this show?
I didn't like it. The one match I liked was the DDP match in Mortis.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked that. But leading off with Prince Iaukea and Kidman, I could kind of go along with that. I didn't mind the finish of Megan Hugh Morris with Barbarian and Jimmy Hart trying to pull it off.
That makes sense.
But overall, not a fan of this show at all.
Yeah. But something that I am a fan of is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now. RJ here from the Ringside Rant. Wanted to tell you about a great sponsor for the show, EveryPlate. That's EveryPlate.com. While most meal kits come with a premium price tag, EveryPlate offers tasty dinners that won't break the bank. Even at full price, EveryPlate is 50% cheaper than grocery shopping and making it easy to save money. Experience full plates and full wallets with America's best value meal kit. EveryPlate delivers pre-portioned ingredients and easy-to-follow recipe cards right to your door so you can spend less time preparing and cooking and spend time enjoying the great food that you're going to make with your friends and family. Last year, when EveryPlate came on board with the Ringside Rant, I was kind of skeptic a little bit about running out of things to make, but you can choose between 17 different recipes that change each week and swap from proteins to veggies and sides to your liking. EveryPlate cuts out trips to the grocery store and stressful meal planning so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes. Times are tough right now, money's tight in a lot of households, but when you visit EveryPlate.com and use the promo code RINGSIDERANT179, you can try EveryPlate for just $1.79 per meal by going to that website, that's EveryPlate.com, and entering the promo code RINGSIDERANT179. Order right now at EveryPlate.com and never order with another company again.
It's listener questions.
All right, Justin. So we got some listener questions this week, apparently. And I don't know. I haven't gotten anything from Money Mike yet. So I don't know if he's okay or if he's just working a lot or you did something to him.
Let's get this done before he gets it in.
Okay. That's what she said. So our first question comes to us from the big man himself, Mr. Brad
Stanton, of course. He's taking over Money Mike's spot. Brad Stanton.
He is. He's even got his own music now.
And I like Brad Stanton's questions a lot more than Money Mike's. I'm just saying.
I figured you would. So, all right. So his question is, or he has two, actually. He says his first question is about Louis Spicoli. He said he had a lot of problems over the years. What do you think of his character, and do you think he deserved all the chances that he received?
I don't think much about his character because he wasn't there very long. Right. It was literally a hiccup. As far as his chances, he did have a lot of chances. I think he was in WWE for a jobber spot there.
He was in ECW too.
ECW. I mean, if he just would have, I don't know, man. I wasn't there, so I can't say. But yeah. I just don't feel like he took advantage of his chances very well.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. You know, he kind of shot himself in the foot, and I hate, you know.
And honestly, if you look at Spicoli, he wasn't working out the gym every day. Obviously,
he wasn't a body guy, but you know, neither was some other people, and they got themselves over.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, if he really wanted to get himself over, like if it was me, and I had that opportunity, I would have been in the gym every day trying to get bigger, trying to do whatever I could to, you know, help my spot there. I don't know that he did that. I think he took the path of getting in with some of the guys that were doing some bad things and being that guy.
Yeah.
With them.
He got in over time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
You don't want to see anything bad happen to somebody, regardless on who they are. But when you get these many chances, it's like, okay, you think hopefully something would stick one of those times. Unfortunately, they didn't. But
I'll say this: God rest Louis Spicoli's soul.
Sure,
I'm sure.
Yes,
you know, he seemed like a tortured person that apparently felt like he needed to get involved with that stuff, and I feel bad about it. And so I don't want to act like I'm shitting all over him, but I'm just saying that he could have took some better paths. So if that's the answer to that, Brad, then that's the answer to that.
So his last question is: do you prefer Buff Bagwell as an NWO heel or as a babyface?
I prefer him as an NWO heel.
Yeah, so do I.
He never got over as a babyface. He got over
American Males.
Yeah, let's not bring up that song. Thank God that hasn't been on our.
Oh, maybe, shit. I forgot. Oh, damn it.
Maybe we should play that. But
we won't do that to the listeners.
But yeah, he was over huge as a heel here. I loved his posing and Buff the Stuff and all that. I thought he was way better as an NWO heel than as a face.
Oh, without question. Without question. So thanks for those questions, Brad, and as always, supporting us. The next group of questions comes from the devilish one himself, Devin Dowling.
Devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what.
Sorry, Devin Dowling, for your 49ers losing. I was really rooting for a Bengals 49ers Super Bowl III going on, but I guess
and I will back you up on that, Justin. He actually did say that, Devin, that to, I don't know if it was on the show or was privately or whatever, but he did say that he wanted a Niners and Bengals Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Well, part of it was selfish. I felt like we had a better chance of winning against the 49ers.
Well, we saw how that worked out. But his first of two questions is, do you think DDP and Chris Benoit would have been a good tag team going forward for the tag titles? If they put them together?
Yeah, it's a weird thought. I've never thought about it, honestly. But I think DDP was on that trajectory. He was U.S. champion here. He mm-hmm. was moving into that world title spot here. So I think the tag team spot both of them would have slowed mm-hmm. him down. So I would say no to that.
Well, they're going to different trajectories at different times because DDP was going up here where Chris Benoit was kind of just floating around.
But Chris Benoit was now proving himself. Like the fans knew he was the man here as a worker. So Chris Benoit was moving into that U.S. title spot, moving in, you know, he would be the WCW champion by 1999, a year later. Mm-hmm. So they're both in that trajectory going up. I think the tag team championship would have slowed that trajectory down. If that makes any sense.
Or you could even do it, and this is an interesting way of thinking also, is DDP's heavyweight champion, Benoit's the U.S. champion, and they're tag team champions. Kind of something that we saw in WWE later on.
Well, Bret Hart and Goldberg did that.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and that turned out well for Bret Hart, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Then they go into a feud, and he's dead after that, so... I just No, I would say no to that. With all respect to Devin, I love Devin, but I don't know that that would have worked real well. Okay, I just don't feel like those two knew each other or were together on TV enough to be tag team champions.
No, that makes sense. So I think this next question is probably going to be more towards me because you don't really watch a lot of current stuff, especially AEW. But see, we asked, was Lodi's character similar to Brandon Cutler today?
Yeah, I don't even know who Brandon Cutler is.
That's what I figured too. So that, like I said, that was probably more of a me question than a you question. But so basically, Brandon Cutler is the lackey of the Young Bucks.
Okay.
So he's their friend. He got a job, a wrestling job contract with AEW because of the Young Bucks, basically. So Lodi, is he basically the Lodi of AEW? And I don't want to shit on anybody by any means. Lodi actually had character.
Lodi
actually had character. And like I said, I don't know Brandon Cutler personally. I'm talking as far as a character in ring. I'm not talking about him personally. I'm sure he's a very nice man, very nice guy, but his character is the shits. He basically gets his ass kicked every time that people go against him. But Lodi had character. Brandon Cutler does not.
The thing about Lodi is maybe at this time Lodi was still what you would call Brandon Cutler, but they built the Lodi character a little bit until. I mean, he at least had something. He was still probably a jobber even when he got out of what he was doing here. Mm-hmm. But they still kind of built the character a little bit. I don't know. I guess what you're saying is this guy hasn't done that yet. Brandon Cutler.
No, correct. No, he hasn't. All right. So Anthony Pyrus is up next. He says, urban legend has Luis Spicoli has pissed off Tony Schiavone off being a big time with his bombshell comment. Have you heard of this? And do you think the incident may have hurt his chances of going farther had he lived? I've never heard of that before.
What was it that he said was a bombshell comment?
I don't know. I don't know what that's in reference to. I'll actually have to chat with him about it, but I don't, I didn't know if you heard about it. So I wanted to keep it in here.
No, I can't answer the question, Anthony. And I appreciate you asking a question. I don't remember whatever he said was a bombshell comment. I would have to look that up and figure it out.
I don't remember hearing anything. I don't know if it was the week before on Nitro that he said something about it.
Might have been.
Might have been.
But Anthony is such a better historian than us. He remembers this stuff. I don't remember that at all.
He's so old. That's why.
Well, there's that. But I think I said this last week, Anthony, I appreciate all the love that you've gave me as a Bengals fan because, you know, when the Bengals beat the Raiders, he said, this is awesome for you guys. And I, you know, come for someone that wins a Super Bowl every other year. I appreciate that, Anthony. I appreciate you asking this question. So what you got, RJ?
So Louis was sitting on commentary when Tony Schiavone mentioned that a bombshell announcement was coming up later in the show, because I think I'm pretty sure Spicoli was from Oklahoma City, and this was around the time when the Oklahoma City bombing occurred.
Yes, a couple years later, years later.
Yeah. So it occurred on April 19th, 1995. Thunder originated from the Myriad in Oklahoma City on the 12th of 98. The show had show had only started airing in January and still was weekly.
Is he basically saying that Spicoli said something about the Oklahoma City bombing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not cool, man. Kids got killed in that. I I don't know, Anthony, if that's the question you're asking, but if he said something about that, that's kind of weird and bad. I mean, yeah. I understand this is 97, 98 when you're trying to get heat, but you don't get heat off of kids getting blown up. That's right.
Larry Zbyszko would later go on saying that he, out of the respect for the family, he doesn't want to make a comment on the at this time. So, but yeah, that's what I found online with WrestlingClassics.com. So,
I mean, I'll say this. Jim Cornette made
a lot worse.
Well, he made a comment about, you know, he got blown up worse than the challenger or whatever.
Yes, so,
but that was you know, same thing, a few years after the challenger. And I love Jim Cornette. I'm a big Jim Cornette fan. Wasn't the right thing to say, you know. And I understand we all wanted to get heat as heels. Mm-hmm. Not good. You don't play off of tragedies like that in such way. So if that's what we're talking about here with Spicoli in Oklahoma City, no.
So our last question comes to us from the lovely top gal, Ms. Amy. She says, "Hey guys," every time. So listening to the beginning of Thunder with Savage, Hulk, and Eric, my wrestling mind begins to wander. It's like she's telling a story. I love it when she asks questions. was there any benefit to Randy being in the NWO? I say no, but would love your thoughts. P.S. Please, for the love of God, get the music entrance placements for this week.
Well, listen.
I had to leave that in there.
Listen, Amy, we ain't changing the music shit. We've already changed it once for you, so just jump off that bandwagon. now, as far as what did she say about?
Any benefit to having Macho in the NWO?
Honestly, I agree with you in a way, Amy, but I get it. Like, NWO was supposed to be former WWE guys invading WCW, so in that way, I kind of understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand, like, listen, man, I fucking hate Hulk Hogan, man. I don't like him. So just leave them as, you know, a separate. And it showed because Macho got out of it pretty soon because him and Hogan are just like oil and water. They shouldn't mm-hmm. be together, you know. And if they wanted to do the, you know, the WCW version of the explosion of the, Mega Powers. If they want to do that, they should have done it in 94 or 5, late 94, early 95.
It's too late now.
Yeah, it's like no one cares. And so I don't know. I don't think I agree with you, kind of, Amy. I don't know that I would have loved Macho face. At this point, if you're going to turn Hogan heel, people need that old school face, and Macho would have been that guy. So okay. I agree with her on that.
I think there was some benefit to it, that being that they wanted to always have that Savage and Hogan blow off. And I think some sort of weird way they wanted Randy to be that guy to get these guys over, to be that mentor. That would be the only benefit in my eyes.
It almost looked to me like Randy was the guy to work, you know, because Hogan ain't working but once every couple months. So Randy was the guy having that feud with DDP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without Randy joining the NWO, we don't have that feud with DDP.
Right.
So in a way, I kind of agree with it. In a way, I kind of don't.
I get what you're saying, too, where we'd rather see him as a face, too, being that face of WCW. But in that aspect, it's like, then you wouldn't see a lot of this stuff that we did see with him and DDP, like you said, or him with Piper or Flair or any of these guys or Brett earlier on. And we wouldn't have seen that. So I think that would be the only, the benefit of it. So.
No, I think it comes down to this, Amy. How many heels do we have? How many faces do we have? And you got Sting, you got a lot of DDP. You've got the faces on that side. It's like, and Hogan's only going to work once a month. So you have to have someone out there doing it. I felt like they put Macho in that spot.
No, exactly. And then I think that's pretty much the only benefit. Hold on, Justin, hold on. Did you get that message?
What? Oh God. Oh,
no. I guess Mike came in at the last 0 hour.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
Well, guess what? This is the
Royal. Why does he have that many though?
Hold on. This is the Royal Rumble. Boom. Time's out. No money, Mike, is what I say.
I guess so. But anyways, no, he's got a couple questions. We can't do that to Money Mike. Because we'll get death notices or something in a mail.
He's friends with Michael Amen, and they might sue us.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Between the two of them, they probably could, right?
They got a money man and a lawyer. We're in trouble.
Oh, we're screwed. But he's got two questions. His first one is, in your opinion, what was the bigger mistake made by WCW when it came to producing television, adding Thunder or expanding Nitro to 3 hours?
Expanding Nitro to 3 hours. No doubt.
I think
if you don't expand Nitro to 3 hours, then Thunder is a better show because you put on Thunder.
But why do we need Thunder if I want to expand it to 3 hours. Okay.
It's wrong. It's wrong.
Let me get you my goddamn shut up.
I'm just saying as well as I do, 3 hours is a long time to watch a Nitro every week.
But why? Okay, so here's my thought process behind it. What do you think would be cheaper as far as putting a show on? Adding in a third hour or creating a whole nother fucking
You're asking TV about show? Cheaper. You're you asking about buy- cheaper, which doesn't have anything to do with fan reaction.
I'm getting there. You have to buy a whole new set. You have to employ a whole new group of people. You have to pay guys to come in. Okay. That alone is shit. Secondly, you could get all these guys onto this extra hour because Thunder was only a 2 hour show. You're telling me you can't put a fucking 2 minute Goldberg match versus Mark Starr or whoever onto a Nitro in 3 hours. You can't put Ming and Barbarian on a Nitro in 3 hours because this is a clusterfuck either way.
My argument here is you got 3 hours of Nitro where you're not telling any stories of so many matches because you're just filling matches.
But you're not telling any story on Thunder either.
Well, you could if you take an hour out of Nitro and then you start telling some stories on Thunder. That's my point. The problem is, hold on. The main problem is WCW wasn't telling stories at all, other than some of the major stories that they wanted to tell. My thought process is, I told you this last week on Nitro when we did a 3 hour Nitro. So many matches were cold, just cold matches. There's no storyline, and I just felt like that's. If we want to talk about Starrcade 97, that was the downfall of WCW. No, in my opinion, the downfall of WCW was the 3 hour Nitro. Now you're telling stories or not telling stories. You're just having cold matches to where It's like, okay, we want to see Hogan and Sting at the end. We want to see DDP and whoever. We want to see this. But other than that, it's cold.
And so
if you condense that to a 2-hour storyline that builds to then a 1-hour show on TBS on Thursday, a 1-hour show, not a 2-hour show. Notice that they did a 2-hour Thunder. Didn't need that 1-hour Thunder. Take that 1 hour out of Nitro, put it on Thunder.
So you said cold matches. We just saw a cold match between Prince IK and Billy Kidman. That's yes. A fucking cold match on right. Thunder.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They fucked themselves, bro.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I'm thinking as far on how I would have done it. It would have made more sense to me to expand to the 3 hours.
No, and I think expanding to the 3 hours was their Waterloo.
But if they could, you think they could have done a 3-hour show the right way and made it work?
If they had Vince McMahon producing it, maybe, and Bruce Pritchard.
But what I'm saying, if could they have made it work, the 3 hours? Because then they wouldn't have to worry about Nitro or Thunder.
No, well, but. Here's the difference. Eric didn't have a choice. Ted told him he needed to have a show on Thursday. So if I'm Eric, I would have said, okay, if you're going to make me do that, cut an hour out of Nitro on Monday because we are oversaturating.
But we're also talking hindsight being 2020 too. We know what ended up happening.
I understand.
And in that moment, it's like
I will say this: in 1998, I was no TV producer, and I am definitely looking at this through rose-colored glasses. But I just think 3 hours of Nitro was a big mistake.
Yeah,
why couldn't you just stay with two? Why did you have to go to three? What was the main reason you had to go to 3 hours of Nitro? There wasn't a reason for it. Yeah. There was really not a good reason for it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I'm still staying with my opinion. But anyway, so his last question, thank you, we got to that last one, but was launching a second national television show, the first step in the oversaturation of the wrestling TV market. And go.
I mean,
I know you wanted to talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, we kind of just talked about it. Yeah, it was. But I think you could have done it the right way. I don't know that I would have done it on Thursday. Well, I mean, Thursday's not terrible, but
well, yeah, not good.
If you had a 2-hour Nitro and did a 1-hour Thursday show, yes, then I would say yes, but they didn't do it that way. So I say no.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that one, on that point anyways. So Money Mike, thanks for, I know we kind of got with
money,
you last
money,
minute anyway,
money,
so.
Money, money, thank you, Money Mike. Go fuck yourself.
What a transition. He's the king of transitions, my friends. So let's go grab, what do we call? I don't even know what the hell his name is anymore. Let's hit the buttons, monkey.
Let's get musical. Let me hear your body talk.
All right, Justin, we got two more this week going into this list. Hopefully Amy will, I doubt she will, but hopefully Amy will appreciate it. But nothing's changed in the top 10 from last week. So you listen to last week's episode, you know what our top 10 is. If you don't know what our top 10 is, go listen to last week.
And I can say that nothing's going to change this week because honestly, no. WCW music sucks compared to WWF music for the most part. There are some differences, but I'm trying to figure out who can I do that's on the show this week that we haven't done. Unfortunately, I got to do Glacier, guys. So here's Glacier. That's like my sister's tumbling class.
Sounds like a rave when you had one too many edibles.
Ooh. we've heard enough. That's enough.
We turn it up?
No. I said we've heard enough. That's enough.
I think I just threw out my shoulder because I tried doing one of those arm thrust.
Honestly, I didn't think I could ever rank something as low as American Made, but I'm doing it right now. I'm putting it last on the list.
Oh my God, I choked.
I mean, we went through 40 something songs and I've never
this
ranked
is the 43rd.
Anything as bad as Hulk Hogan's WCW theme, because
we heard it this week.
I love his WWE theme, and it's just such a, you know, just like Hulk Hogan's theme music was so good in WWF, and then he goes to WCW and it's WCW-tized. And that's why I ranked Bret Hart's WCW music so low last week.
Because WCW sucks.
Yeah. Music. And this just ranks up there at the top. This has to go to the bottom, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not gonna disagree with you on that one. So my addition to this week
and I'm sure Amy will say that should be top 15. Listen, Amy, get your own show.
Top 10. she's a glacier mark, I'm sure, right? So my pick this week is going to be the most over. The man that outkicked his coverage the most.
Yes, this man fucked Bill Stacey Keibler. So
Tori Wilson.
Or Tori, well, both maybe. Who knows?
So without further ado, I give you Kidman. Stop you on that one. I thought this was a lot better when I listened to it before, and it really
it's not good either. What I would say about it, though, it has a really poor front end.
Yeah,
I can kind of get into the middle part, but either way, I feel like this needs to go underneath Hulk Hogan and right above Glacier's music.
Oh, come on, it's got it. I'll suggest. How about right behind Disco Inferno?
No, not gonna do it. I think this right needs to go. This needs to go to the bottom, above.
No, it can't go right to the bottom. It's gotta go.
What's good about it?
It's not Bret Hart or it's not Hogan.
Bret Hart's music is better than this.
Okay, fine. Oh fuck! In WCW.
I'm just saying. I don't remember this shit at all, and there's a reason for it, because it's not good.
Okay,
there's no memorability out. Put it down there.
Fine.
Right.
It's right above Hogan.
This tells you where we're at here. We're trying to find music for these Thunders and Nitros in 98. We've done most all the good shit, and we're trying to find some shit, and it's all bad.
Don't worry, we're coming up. Hopefully, we'll be coming up in the next couple months. We're going to be coming up on some WWE mid-90s to early 90s. So hopefully we'll come up with some better music for you guys.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give you guys a nugget here. Next week or next month, we are doing March of 97 in WWE, right? So leading up to WrestleMania 13. So we will get some good music out of that, but golly, There's just not a lot of good music we can find out of 1998 WCW, right?
No, we can't. You can't. And that's why a lot of the WWE was getting over at this time and going forward, because that they had the little things.
And WCW music always just sounds like the Great Value or the whatever the Walmart, thing
Walmart
is.
Walmart version.
Yeah, it's just, there's just not, it's not good compared to WWE.
But one thing that is good is if you head over to castbuy.com/ringsiderant, check out all our great links over there. All the platforms we're on, iTunes, Google, Anchor, all the great networks we're on, Shining Wizard Wrestling Network, Wrestling with Johnners, Full Press Coverage. We appreciate each and every one of you. We appreciate each and every one of you that have tagged us on Twitter at @ringsiderant with all your great shows. I always try to spread the good word of all those independent podcasters out there. Get the Tables, Speeds and the Benchmark, Lines up Shooting Up North with Lewis Carlin, all those great guys that tag us. The Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling, Doing the Favor, all those great guys. So check those guys out. Make sure you follow Justin at JD2040. Like I said, follow the show and myself at @ringsiderant. Next week, Justin, we got Nitro from February 16th, 1998. This is the go-home show.
Go-home show to go for Super Bowl 8.
Thank God. Thank God. But no, it's leaning up to something. It may not be the best show, but it'll be the best show to us because we get to crap on it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, every month we do a thing here, it's not going to be the best. There's no way, because there's only, we're going to do what we do and we're going to look at wrestling history, and it is what it is. I want to say thank you to Amy and Brad and Mike and
Devin
Dowling, all the people that are sending questions each week. Thank you guys for interacting with us. We really appreciate it.
And also, I
just want to say, Hooday, go Bengals next week for sure.